You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. And you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do it boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan, thanks for joining me. Tonight's show reaches back into the Mouthful archives all the way to 1997, when I had the pleasure of speaking with Rico Traverso, his son George, and his grandson Michael, who at the time of the interview was just starting to work at the iconic market. Currently, Traverso's is marking the 100th anniversary of Rico's birth on March 15, 1911, with a special sandwich, salami and Swiss, Rico's favorite. Rico passed away on Easter Sunday, March 15th, 2001, the same day that Joey Ramone died. We're joining in the celebration of his birth by rebroadcasting this very special conversation. Today, Traverso's is located near the corner of Stagecoach and Fountain Grove Boulevard in northeast Santa Rosa. It is the market's fourth move. You'll hear about early moves now in a conversation with three generations of Traverso's. Welcome to Mouthful, Rico.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Very happy to be here.
And George, Rico's son. Michelle.
Thank you.
And Michael.
I'm Michelle.
Rico's grandson. Did I get all that right?
Yeah, you got that right.
Let's talk a little bit, first of all, about how the market got started, and that was long before you were even thought of, Michael. So
that's
we're
right.
Going to bring you in the conversation in a little bit. It was Louis who first came here with your father. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. The two of us. We started in... I came here in 1927 with my mother. My brother, you remember Louis, of course.
Of course, Louis,
yes. He was already here. And at the time, really, he was working for somebody else with my father. But finally, in 1932... we started our own business, my father, Louis, and myself. We started first with the old Bachelor Lupi store. That was down lower 4th Street on 4th and Davis. Everything has changed,
yes.
Of course. Sometimes it's even difficult for me to visualize it, you know, but that was many years ago, of course. Then eventually we bought a store to... on 4th Street and Ney Street. And we were there for several years, where we finally moved to 2nd and Ney Street for the simple reason that we had a parking place. We could see that at that time, parking was very important, even then.
Even then.
Yeah, it was getting so that people used to tell us they would like to come over here, but there was no parking, which is true. You know, there was a little bit of a side parking on 4th Street. So we bought the property on 2nd and 8th Street, and we were there for over 30 years, where we finally, getting back a step, in 1969, we had a terrible earthquake in Santa Rosa.
Right.
And at the time... the urban renewal, so-called, they took all this area of from A Street to up to Morgan Street to 4th Street, up at 4th Street, and the business had to close, get out, so that they could rebuild again. And unfortunately, we were in that group, even though the building didn't suffer major structure. But we had to get out. And there was a time there, to tell you the truth, when my brother and I thought that perhaps we should get out, give us something. They never gave us very much anyway. But in the meantime, George, my son, and Bill, who were teaching at South San Francisco, They express a desire to come into the store. I guess it was a little nostalgic for them because as kids they used to work in the store, you know, helping a little bit in the fixing the soda water and so forth.
Right.
So I said, maybe we should continue. It was quite a struggling time because we couldn't even find a place where to move until we found this place where we are now. It's on, as you know, 3rd Street between 2nd and 3rd Street. I mean 3rd and 4th. Mm-hmm. No, 2nd and 3rd.
2nd and 3rd, right.
And we've been there now. We started there in 1972, George? 73. So was it 20?
October 73.
Yeah, it was just after.
It was a fun time in a certain sense. Uh-huh. Go ahead. I don't want to.
Well, no, I was going to say we got there. That's where we are now.
Now, I had just moved to Sonoma County a year prior to that, and I was living out in East Petaluma. So I hadn't quite made my way around Santa Rosa yet. But my understanding of those days are that it was more than just George and Bill deciding to make that change in career, but that there was a real public outcry in Sonoma County. People in Santa Rosa did not want to lose Traversa.
That's true. We had, without exaggeration, hundreds, perhaps thousands of people.
A survey, in fact.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it was an informal survey.
It came into hundreds and hundreds of people. So please don't quit the business. We like to have you in Santa Rosa.
Uh-huh. Now, the survey, was that just people who came into the store you would ask them?
Well, yes. Basically, they picked up this particular information in the store and filled it out, and they wanted to know, or we wanted to know exactly more or less where they would like us to relocate.
Ah.
And I think most of the people that we had response was the northwestern section or the Proctor Terrace area in that area, like, you know, town and country, so forth.
Right.
But the bottom line, we decided if we could stay downtown, that would be probably the best.
I'm really glad you did.
And as I was saying, it was an exciting time. And speaking from a family point of view, 25 years ago, we moved into the new store. It was on October 1st, 1973. Well, Michael was born in August, and we moved into our house, new house, which we're still in September. So for 3 months, we had something going on.
Wow. And so that was a real transition for you.
It was.
I didn't
it was
know
a, tr- a big transition, yeah.
Now, I knew that you and Bill, who's your cousin, mm-hmm. who is Louis' son.
Yes.
I knew that you had both been teachers. And this was this high school teachers?
It was middle school, junior high. Bill was in the history end of it, and he also did some work with theater arts and yearbook. And I was more in the business end, typing. Now it's called keyboarding, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And I did also some of the business law sort of thing, but in a small sense for that grade group. You know, simple things like writing checks and typical business knowledge.
But, yes. Well, the thing I hadn't realized was this wasn't in Sonoma County. This was in...
In South San Francisco. Yeah. We both attended U.S. University of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill afterwards decided to go into teaching, and he student taught at Galileo High School in the city.
Oh, very well-known school in the city.
Yeah, and I followed him. I went into the teaching for the fifth year, and then I went to Galileo also. And then I followed him to Parkway Junior High at the time. So we were there. I was there for 3 years, and he was there for four.
So Parkway lost two teachers at the same time.
Well, I don't know. We lost two teachers.
Uh-huh. We're going to take a little musical break right now, and we will be right back with more talk with the Traverso family.
Oh,
You're listening to Mouthful on KRCB FM. I am talking with Rico George and Michael Traverso. And I have to go back to this survey for a minute, these questionnaires that people filled out. Did you by any chance save them? Are they tucked away in a box?
We save a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
Michael's laughing. I save a lot of things. But you know, I have to look and see. We probably have them.
God, that would be so interesting.
Yeah, it would be interesting. Yeah, we probably do, Michelle. Next time you come in, I'll try to dig them up somewhere.
Oh, that would just be fascinating. One of the things that I loved in Gay LeBaron's book, and it is Santa Rosa, a 20th century town, and it's by actually Gay LeBaron and Joanne Mitchell. They do so much, not just history, but photographs of early Santa Rosa, and there's this wonderful picture of, I think it's the first store with your father, and if you look really closely, Rico, you can recognize you.
Oh, is that right?
And it's not that long, I don't think, after. Well, you'd been here a number of years because you were here about 7 years.
This must have been on 2nd Street, on A Street.
It was the one in 1941.
Yeah. Oh, 41 so it was the picture. Second store.
Yeah. There's Beppe Narduzzi.
Yeah,
and Mike Rossi.
Mike Rossi.
And there was Gavi Garaventa.
Yeah, my friend Gavino. Yeah.
And, of course, there was Nonon, your dad.
Nonon, yeah. Louis, I guess Louis took.
Oh, that was funny. everybody asked, where are you, Louis, in here? And he said, well, I took the picture.
Oh, that's why we didn't see Louis. Okay. But that's really a great picture. And that book is still, you can find that book in a lot of local bookstores. Mm-hmm. And certainly you can also find it in any of the public libraries in Sonoma County. And that is, it's a wonderful book for Sonoma County history. But it's really wonderful. I love that picture. I just think it's great. So, Rico, I want to come back to you for a little bit. And you're from the town, and the Traversos are from Genoa.
Genoa, yeah.
And that is in Liguria.
The region of Liguria, yes. Because we come from a little town just above Genoa. We call it Genoa because it's the province. But I wasn't born right in Genoa.
Uh-huh.
We just about 15 miles from the city of Genoa. And I was there until I was 16 years old.
What was the name of the town?
The name of the town is called Scofera. Scofera. It's
more of a geographical spot where there's a pass.
It's a kind of a. I'm sure very few people would realize that, but it's on the way, on the main highway to go to north, going up to the Po Valley.
Oh, okay.
Into Milano.
Yeah.
Uh
huh. Up to that way. Yeah.
And you were there until you were 16.
Yeah, I came here 16 years old.
So what did you make of America after you made that journey and got all the way, not just to America, but to the whole other side of the continent?
Well, yes, it took me a long time to get here. believe it or not, it took us. I came with my mother, I think I mentioned. We came, we left Genoa on the 7th of October, 1927, and I remember it took us 10 days to come to New York on a boat. Nice boat, Duilio was the name of the boat. Then when we got to New York, we somehow we managed to, some friend that we befriended on the boat, we went to the Grand Station?
Grand Central Station.
Grand Central in New York. Oh, that was, that to me, that was very intimidating, I tell you.
What
it
still
a huge building. Anyway, we got on a train and we travel all the way down to the so-called Southern Route, the Southern Pacific, from New York to New Jersey to Washington, D.C., then straight down to Georgia and Louisiana. We crossed the Mississippi to Texas, of course, to Texas, El Paso, and finally we came to Los Angeles. To tell you the truth, I didn't think very much of the country until I got to Los Angeles. I was kind of depressing at the time. It was the month of October and hot. You could see all those people working in the field. It wasn't really the best time of the year, I guess. So finally, anyway, we arrived in San Francisco. My brother Louis was there to pick us up, and we came to Santa Rosa. I tell you, I love Santa Rosa. As soon as I came to Santa Rosa, my mother and I both, we really like it. I think it's very, very nice.
Uh-huh. And you had, at that point, you'd been separated from your father and your brother for 5 years.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
a really long time.
They had come here in 1922.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's an old story, of course. We couldn't come together.
Right. So, yeah, a lot of people have that story.
You know, it's complicated. Anyway, I'm glad I found him.
And then Louis went to a college that no longer exists, but that a lot of people in Santa Rosa remember.
Well,
Sweets
time,
Business College.
Business, it was called
Sweets. Sweets Business.
Sweets Business College.
Uh huh.
Yeah, a lot of young people went to that college.
Mm-hmm.
I think, as far as I know, he specializes in business. In fact, Louis, the first job was as bookkeeper for the old Bacigalupi market.
Mm-hmm.
That's how, when I came to Santa Rosa, that's where he was working at the time.
Mm-hmm. And then you opened Traverso's, and from the start, kept the books.
He kept the books. And didn't Uncle Louis also work at the old American Trust company?
Yeah, he did for a while, yeah.
The banking business.
Before we opened the... This was before we opened the store.
Uh-huh.
He thought he would have liked to work in the bank. The old, at the time, was called American Trust. Now is
Wells Fargo.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay.
He worked there for a few months, but then I don't think he enjoyed it. He came back to his bookkeeping. He was good at it. Eh? Louis, my brother, was a very good bookkeeper, really.
And he
all these years, he kept us out of jail. Anyway. Yeah.
a very good accomplishment for a bookkeeper.
Really.
We like them to keep us out of jail.
Yeah.
And he kept books right up until the end of his life.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, Traverso's is the sort of store where you can have a monthly charge account. And I got my handwritten statements from Louis every month.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah, he taught me a lot of things. Uh-huh. And now we're approaching the 21st century, so we're into computers now, believe
that's
it or not.
That's when Michael will come in.
So then Michael, he's giving me more information.
One of the things that came with you, well, not from Italy, certainly, but from the... I think Traverso's number 2 to Traverso's number 3 was the floor. Is that correct?
The same floor?
Yeah, the floor.
Well, actually, no.
It's actually not.
The second floor, the third store that we're in presently, it's a basketball floor, actually. It's
a hardwood floor.
In fact, our opening was delayed about 2 weeks because they did not order enough wood to complete the floor.
So that's not the floor from the second store?
No, we kept a board from the old store, from the second store.
One or two boards.
It's not the original.
Really?
So, no, with the health department, and we could not bring the exact floor.
But
we're breaking more wine,
that.
doing things. Uh-huh. So the aroma is gradually.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful floor. It's a beautiful floor.
Yeah,
and people say, that's
more...
the original floor. That's part of the myth. But that's okay. Now, once Traverso's opened, one of the things Louis always used to like to tell me was, we taught Santa Rosa about Italian food. Before olive oil was trendy, before anybody knew what polenta was, they knew what pancetta was.
That's right.
I remember one time a man came and he wanted to sell us ricotta. Of course, we knew what ricotta was. But at the time, no one knew anything about ricotta. We said, let's take a chance, because we didn't know really if it would go or not, being that according to the demand, you see. And it worked out. There have been so many different items that we really introduced to Santa Rosa.
I remember peanut oil. Remember that story about the peanut oil?
That's right. That's
what happened with peanut oil?
The peanut oil, this gentleman was a great friend of my father. This week, going back quite a few years. People at the time, particularly the Italian people, they wouldn't use anything but olive oil.
Right.
If you use anything but olive oil, it would be a sin, I guess. So this man said, Charlie, you have to try this peanut oil. I think was during the Depression when the business was very tough. And, of course, the price of peanut oil was much more reasonable. mind you that in those days, Michel, a gallon of olive oil used to go for $2, $2.50.
For a gallon?
Italian for a gallon. But the peanut oil was less than $1. So it was a great success. We used to sell out. I tell you, it's good peanut oil for frying. For frying.
For frying, it's a good
for
oil.
For frying, it's very good oil. It took over very well. These are the two items that comes to my mind, but there's many other things. Louis was right but when he mentioned that to you, that the Arabo, particularly the Italian style food, I think we pioneered it, yes, I'm sure.
One of the things I'm curious about is how did the wine side of the business grow? If I'm going to embarrass myself completely if I'm wrong on my dates, but when you opened, Prohibition was underway, right?
Yeah.
What do you remember what that was like then?
Oh, yeah, very
tell
well,
us.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by that period.
Yeah, well, of course, you couldn't sell wine if you didn't have wine. But I remember that there used to be a lot of people that making their own wine.
Right, you could make...
You could make 200 gallons, I believe.
Oh, you could make family. That much.
I think, I'm pretty sure I... Maybe wrong, but quite sure. They used to make... So a lot of people, one item that we used to sell a lot of at that time was sugar, because they wanted to put the sugar...
Boost the alcohol level.
Yeah, I remember. Then finally, in 1932, I guess it was, when Roosevelt became president, they abolished this prohibition.
So it's right.
Beer, beer started coming in, whiskey, and I think we were the first wine and liquor license in Sonoma County.
Really?
I'm pretty sure. Remember?
Yeah, I remember. I remember Bart saying
And then, of course, we started selling wine, naturally. Mm-hmm. Wine now is one of the... Well, it's a great, part of the biggest part of the business.
Yes, it's actually part of the business that a lot of people identify. You know, you mentioned Traversos, and they think wine shop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, we got, you know, we got Bill, he knows his wine.
Yes, Bill definitely knows his wine.
We have Les.
Les Ferguson is very good at So people, they have confidence, in other words.
How many family members, we're going to bring you into the conversation, Michael, how many family members currently are working at the store?
Well, let's see.
We have...
myself and my wife.
Yes,
you know,
Adelaide. She's
the pioneer of the sandwich.
Ah.
Yeah, she's... did she ever tell you how she started the sandwich?
No.
It's a very fascinating story. This was in the old place, you know, early 1930. A man came in the store, and of course he knew Adeline. He said, "Adeline, you have to make me a sandwich. My wife doesn't feel well. She didn't make me a sandwich." And okay, it was something new for us too. So Adeline took a French roll, and she put some salami, some cheese.
I don't think he had mustard or mayonnaise.
No,
it was
mustard,
just dry.
I didn't want to spoil it.
It wasn't camouflage, so to speak.
Right.
And the next day, he came with another friend. And he said, "You know, Adeline, I like that sandwich so much, and my friend here, we would like to have a sandwich." And that's really how it started.
That's how it started.
Yeah, that's how it started. Of course, now we have, three other girls. Helping there, particularly in the sandwich.
Yeah, I know sometimes at lunchtime there can be a really long line waiting for those really good sandwiches. And so we have the two of
you. So we have Dad and Mom, myself, and my cousin Bill, of course.
Right.
And we have Gene, Bill's older brother, who is there. He wears a couple of hats, who was a banker and
retired. Now, Gene is working in the store?
Well, he wears a couple of hats. He comes in and kind of looks over my shoulder sometimes.
He doesn't actually work there,
but he just, you know, puts his head in and checks with me and so forth. And then we have our newest is my son, Michael.
And any of the other grandkids come in? I sometimes think I see familiar faces.
Yeah,
Christmas.
There are a few. There's my nephews. There's Dario and Evan, who are Louis, my brother. My brother's a pharmacist, and my sister Gloria is a nurse, and they're twins, and they're 3 years younger than I am. But we jokingly talk about. Those are the two fellas that are the two people that are trying to get rid of cholesterol, and Bill and I are trying to increase it.
Build it up.
Yeah. But anyway, Evan and Dario, my brother Louis' sons, are 13 and I believe 8, and they're the younger ones. And then I also have a nephew on my wife's side, Joe Volpone. So in fact, he was helping me yesterday.
Uh-huh. So it's still completely a family operation.
Yes.
Yeah, but also Bill, I must say.
And Bill has his family.
He has
Tom.
Two boys and two girls.
Tom and Chris and Stephanie and Alexis.
There are possibilities there.
So there's a few more down the road.
Yes, we can look for a long time of Traversos at Traversos. Well, Michael, welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you.
Did you go away to college and come back to Sonoma County? Tell me how they got you there.
Sure. I went away. I was born and raised here in Santa Rosa, and I went to Montgomery High School, went down to Southern California, went to USC, to the business school, and was graduated about almost 3 years and a month to the day.
Right.
And I was working, had a few different jobs after college, and primarily in sales and marketing. And I recently rejoined back in March of this year.
Now, did you know when you went away to college, did you know that eventually what you wanted to do was come back into the family business, or did you have to go off and miss it and have to make that decision to come back?
It was a little bit of both. I think, I basically grew up in the store, working in the back and kind of the quote-unquote guts of the operation. Then I, when like any high school person of that age, 16, 17, 18, kind of want to go out and see what's on the other side of the fence.
Sure.
And I knew in the back of my mind I'd probably end up back here in some facet.
I think one thing that we talked about, Michael and I, I never really wanted to force anybody, my son or my nephew or whoever, to come, and say, you have to be here. You have to wear an apron, and that's it.
Of course, that wouldn't
be. It's very tough, and my dad didn't do that to me either. And I think in the end, you kind of realize, maybe this is a good deal after all.
Mm-hmm. I think you get a good appreciation for a business like we have when you go out and you work for other people, and you work for a real large corporation like I had, and you kind of miss the small company that we're kind of losing.
Right.
In today's marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has. I've never, of course, that's true. And I haven't thought about that side of it. But of course, that's a huge part of it. I always think of it from the customer's point of view. And I remember so many places I've shopped over the years where the checker doesn't look up. They're ringing their, it used to be they would key in the purchase.
Right. Scan.
Now they scan it. Mm-hmm. Not only do they not remember your favorite cheese or offer you a taste of something, they never even look up. And to contrast that with going into Traversos, and before you even get to the wall of pastas, maybe you get three hugs. And, people, will tell you, one of you will tell me something that's new. And it seems to me that I felt like, part of that store from the second time I walked in. And it just seems like a steady flow, mostly of friends that come through that door. And then also the guys who are coming in and buying their little flask of vodka.
Yes,
and
right.
And a candy bar.
You get a full spectrum.
And, I'm always impressed. You're so nice and so polite to those people. And I think that that's a good thing.
Well, I think that's very important. We've often talked about, our customers. Mm-hmm. And we see, the spectrum of society, so to speak.
Right.
And you have to be positive and you have to be courteous. And that's just part of business, That's just the bottom line. And you have to be patient.
You got to treat them right.
Sure.
But it's that sort of humanity is, like you said, mm-hmm. with a large corporation. I think we're seeing such an increasing impersonal level in our society from being able to get a meal in Santa Rosa that's exactly the same as you might get in Providence, Rhode Island, mm-hmm. or Michigan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No variation, nothing personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the marketplace is really turning into a real sterile atmosphere. A lot of real cookie-cutter chain restaurants, retail outlets. I mean, we've been able in the North Bay here and Bay Area for the all part to really retain, you know, our sense of community and some really nice local businesses. But you can see, you know, not far from the studio here, there's a lot of chain stores that really don't have that personal feel that you would find like at our store, like at you know, there's a few others in the county here.
No, we're very fortunate in Sonoma County to
really
have a
are.
Lot of nice places to shop.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And good restaurants, you know.
I learned that after, you know, living in Los Angeles for 5 years, where it's, you know, it's mall after mall.
Right.
And it's really, I mean, it's you can be in Dallas, Texas, and it'll look the same.
Exactly, yes. But, you know, it's true that we're really lucky in Sonoma County, but I also think that a number of places have had a real hard time struggling to survive mm-hmm. for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. And I think when I think of markets that remind me a little bit of Traverse's, I think of how Volpe's used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Volpe's.
I knew it very well.
Yeah, and it was, I still love it, but now it's really, they've really given up on the market side of things.
Yeah, they're changing, don't they?
Yeah,
they're changing.
They've concentrated on, and I haven't been there in a couple of years, but they've concentrated on the restaurant side.
For a while. Yeah.
But for a while, you used to be able, if you were headed south rather than north, you could stop at Volpe's for cannellini beans or mm-hmm. for good prosciutto mm-hmm. or pancetta, a variety of pastas. And they made their own pasta for a long time. And they mm-hmm. had that same nice old wood floor and the shelves packed with good Italian products.
Right. Well, I think that's the trick. I think in business nowadays, as Michael's saying, the cookie cutter type of thing, I think a lot of people are realizing, going back to the basics, so to speak, to kind of a traditional layout, mm-hmm. you know, where there is sort of, I guess, the homey atmosphere. And, you know, I think it's kind of rewarding for me to try to continue that on.
I'm going to ask my next question after we take another little musical interlude. But I'll tell you what I want. I want to know about the signs in the store. We'll be right back here on Mouthful.
Volare, cantare, let's fly way up to the clouds. Away from the maddening crowds, we can sing in the glow of a star that I know of, where lovers enjoy peace of mind. Let us leave the confusion and all this illusion behind. Just like birds of a feather, a rainbow together we'll find. Volare, oh, e cantare, oh, no wonder my happy heart sings, your love has given me wings. Penso che io sogno così non ritorni mai più. Mi dipinge con le mani e la faccia di blu. Poi d'improvviso tenido dal vento rapito e incominciavo a volare nel cielo infinito. Volare, oh, oh, e cantare, oh, oh, nel blu dipinto di blu, e chi dice di stare lassù,
E volavo, volavo, venice con alte del sole con coro più su, mentre molto pian piano sparivo lontano laggiù. Una musica dolce suonare soltanto per me. Volare, oh, oh. E cantare, oh, oh, oh. No wonder my happy heart sings, your love has given me wings, nel blu dipinto di blu, venite di stare lassù, nel blu dipinto di blu.
So, those signs, those wonderful handmade signs, that is one of the real differences in Traversos, and there's a whole new generation of upscale markets with an emphasis, I think a large emphasis on Italian products because they're so popular, and then with some other international things. But they have very polite, usually computer printout, usually very tastefully done signs that are very subdued. Traversos has signs that you could see in a market in the square in Verona. Rico, tell me about those signs.
I guess they just come naturally. You know? But I always emphasize, I've been telling George and I've been telling Mike, I said, when you display a pile of some goods or something, it's always good to put a sign. People like to know what it is. Not only to know, but also the price, to know how the price is. And it's made, you know, old-fashioned way. I call them old-fashioned signs, really.
And you have a very recognizable hand. It's obvious that you learned penmanship in Europe and not in this country. I think it's very beautiful.
Yeah, well, of course it's true. In Europe, I think they emphasize penmanship more, mm-hmm. more than they do in this country.
It has a very different and very distinctive look. And that's one of the things
that I
really think lends the character to the store. over the last, you guys probably know better than I do, the two of you, we've seen such a change in how America, California in particular, eats.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very much.
And probably if you started at the store in 73, you've seen a huge change just in that period of time.
Yes, especially so yes. Of course, we're mentioning cholesterol and salt and all of this, and more of a healthy, you know, lifestyle eating. And, you know, prosciutto is good, but, you know, eat too much prosciutto is not good for you. Or salami, of course, and a lot of the big, you know, brie cheeses and all of the taleggios and all that. So a lot of people are more conscious with fatty foods.
That's why we've got the olive oil and the red wine to take it off.
That's right.
There you go.
So we have to.
So you've seen that trend in the
much.
Store.
Mm-hmm.
How has it manifested? Has it made people buy smaller portions of the same things?
Well, it's funny. I guess probably smaller portions.
Well,
maybe not as often. Maybe on
our business
special
is family,
occasions.
It's family, and they usually they buy for the family. They buy for two, three, four people. I haven't noticed any change, really.
Uh-huh.
Most of our business is really the same way.
And I was interviewing a man who does marketing for the Salt Institute very recently, and he was saying that in the last 100 to 150 years, the salt consumption in America has not changed. With all the bad news of the early 80s, or with all the good news of the mid-90s, salt consumption has remained pretty much steady, and that little, very obvious blip that you read about in all the major dailies has no real impact on the actual quantity that people are eating, that it stays pretty much the same.
I think the bottom line, of course, everybody wants to live a longer and healthy life, but I think the bottom line is that the people like to enjoy food and wines or whatever, and they sometimes maybe, you know, hedge a little bit. But like Dad was saying, there's not much of a big change. in their buying
they
habits.
Like tasty food. They like tasty.
It's tasty food. Yeah. Yeah.
But you're probably also seeing an increase in the, say, variety. Like, there is a wall or a wall and a half of pasta at Traverse
yes,
right now.
Yes.
Has there always been that much, or has it expanded as pasta has gotten more popular?
Well, I think it's expanded since it's become more popular. At the second store, we had a little pasta section.
Yeah.
Well, and now we have a little bit more of a display of pasta.
I'm sure
more.
There's more. However, I want to tell you, mm-hmm. when we first started in with my dad and Louis in our business, we had a counter built especially for that purpose. We draw it with different type of pasta, you know, spaghetti.
Right, it was a glass counter, I remember.
A glass counter. Mm-hmm. Oh, he looked, my father, he had this idea that he wanted to make sure to look nice, and he did. And you know, I remember we had over 60 different cuts of pasta.
Really? Wow.
From spaghetti to rigatoni to farfalle. Because you see, Italia is they're very descriptive. You know that. Mm-hmm. You know every type of pasta, cut of pasta has a name, but also a meaning. See, farfalle means bow tie or a fly.
Or a fly?
What do you call it?
Like a butterfly.
Like a butterfly. Okay.
Butterfly.
Yes.
What is
orecchiette?
Orecchini.
Orecchiette? Orecchiette are earlobes.
Little earlobes.
Mm-hmm. Every name of the pasta has a different meaning, actually. Mm-hmm. Except spaghetti, of course.
And there's the acini di pepe.
There's one of the little tiny ones.
Yeah.
And each pasta not only has a name and a meaning, but it also has a traditional way that it's used, traditional sauce.
That's right.
The shape isn't
for
entertainment. Like now we're seeing pasta in the shape of grape clusters and
yes,
who
all
knows
of the
what.
New. I was just going to say yuppie pasta.
Yeah,
yes.
And that's for entertainment. It doesn't mm-hmm. have, there's not a function. But say with fettuccine.
Yes.
That's a broad noodle, mm-hmm. and it's designed so that there's a lot of surface area for the cream or sauce,
right. Exactly. Oh,
yes. And the little sauce, little uh-huh. tiny pastas are for soups
for
and
soups.
That sort of thing.
Correct.
Oh, yes. In Italy, they would buy a type of pasta for the accordingly to what they use. For pesto, for instance, it would have to be a flat, you know, pesto.
Pesto, right.
It
has to be a flat noodle?
Flat pasta, like fettuccine or something like that.
Pappardelle,
flat. Okay. If you use a ragu, like they use usually popular in the southern part of Italy around Naples, they buy a heavier pasta, like a long macaroni or
like a
rigatoni, zita, mm-hmm. that type of pasta. Yeah, you can almost tell when they buy pasta how they're going
right.
to use.
They're going to cook it.
And even the Greeks have a pasta.
Yeah.
And it's the.
They have their own tradition.
It's similar to the zita.
Yeah. And they serve a certain way. I mm-hmm. don't know exactly, but
so there's that tradition of going all the way down to the Greeks and.
Right. What are some of the most popular things that you're seeing right now? Are there any food trends, anything? And you too, Michael, just jump in whenever. What do people want right now?
Well, I think, and observing over the years, and then primarily recently, prosciutto has always been popular. But that's really, and people tend, they're buying real high end products, and they're spending a lot of money. Primarily, I could say. They're buying more, or they're buying less of the product, but they're paying more. So years ago, jug wine was probably a big seller. Now we're seeing people spend $20 on a bottle of wine. They're getting a smaller smaller bottle. So I think the same carries over to the cheese and to the meat. Well,
they're becoming more sophisticated. Yeah. And they're knowing good food, traveling, and looking at TV and different recipes shows. And
new items coming in too.
And thanking also to people like you writing in periodicals that make people aware of what's happening. Uh-huh. And I don't know if there's such a trend. Old things like polenta. We were talking about polenta.
Right.
We've always sold polenta, and that's become popular. Always been popular.
The olive oils have really expanded.
Bacalao,
over
the codfish.
Is bacalao getting popular again?
Yes. Well, the bacalao with the Portuguese has always been popular in Spanish. And the bacalao with the Italians has always been. And, of course, with the Norwegians, the lutefisk.
And the French, I think we're seeing so much interest in France, particularly the south of France and Provence.
The Provence.
And Brondade de Morou is very popular. So, yes, Traversos is where you can get salt cod in Sonoma County.
Yeah, it's about one of the only few places in Sonoma County.
You got to make sure you ask for it.
We keep it locked up in the back. Yeah. See, that's another thing. At the old store, we used to leave it out and it used to lend aroma to the atmosphere in the store. You know, now we have to keep it refrigerated. It has to be cool. And
that's
the health department.
It's a health department. It's one of their good things, really, when you stop and think about it. I mean, you know, and that's another funny story. People open up our soda case, and they say, "What's that smell in there?"
Well, you know, that is one of the things. If you look through my travel photographs, you will rarely see a face. You'll go through page after page, and you will either see outdoor markets, or you might see 10 pictures of stalls with salt cod hanging. I just love the displays of salt cod, and you see them all around the Mediterranean.
Yes, very much.
And a lot of different types.
That's very true. And even prosciutto. We're talking about prosciutto's hanging. Hung up all over the place. Right. And it's the type of prosciutto with a hoof, you know, and the fur on it, you know. So they get really the real atmosphere.
Yeah. Yes, and, well, you know, the health department does do good things for us.
Well, of course, too,
people. But I miss that visual.
Yes. Of course, people have a different eating habits, too. I'm sure in Italy, prosciutto is a staple in the, you know, where
right, you toss a little bit into the pot to make risotto.
That's right. It's very versatile. Exactly. And as I say, they're hanging in the store unrefrigerated, and there's a movement. They sell them.
Right.
You know, like we sell Hershey candy bars, maybe.
I buy prosciutto more often than I buy a Hershey candy bar. You've seen a lot of oil, a lot of change in olive oil, too, from the time you sold it, Rico, for $2 or $2.50 a gallon, and now you sell it
can go up to $50 a bottle. Yeah.
Right. And have people gotten more – is there – what am I saying? An accumulated knowledge that you're finding in customers that they understand olive oil more than they did a decade ago?
I believe so. Yes.
People are traveling more. You know, they're traveling in Europe. Mm-hmm. They taste it over there in Italy, in France. And they come back and they remember.
And they want to
find
one like that.
I think, too, like I said, you know, writers like you who give them ideas
and write
books and people read and they see things on television, cooking. And that all lends to this.
Even no pun intended.
The flavored olive oils now, too.
With the basil and the tarragon. And
that's something new.
Garlic.
That's pretty new.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, enough about customers. Let's talk about what you guys eat. Did you grow up on a diet? You must have just grown up on the most wonderful, robust Northern Italian diet, George.
Well, I guess we had a lot of soup, a lot of minestrone soup.
Did you rebel?
Yeah, I did. I didn't like it too much in the beginning.
And when you rebelled, what was it? Where did you go?
As far as other types of foods?
Yeah, what did you – what was it you wanted?
Oh, gee. I don't know. I'd like food. I don't know. I forgot exactly what I wanted. But I remember minestrone all the time, pasta. Pasta was a staple. And, we ate American food too, you know. I like food. So I wasn't too picky. Uh-huh. But I didn't like the soup, that much soup. And my grandmother, my dad's mom, used to make a soup with chestnuts, remember?
Oh, yes,
And the milk. My wife, Sandra, still remembers her experience.
Not everybody likes it.
Now, I've never had that soup. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, it was actually like a boiled – was it boiled milk?
You get the dry chestnuts and you have to soak them. Then you boil them the next day till they are soft. In the meantime, you cook the rice on the side.
There's rice involved.
Oh, you cook rice.
Cook the rice in milk.
Yes.
In milk. And then you put the chestnut with the rice and milk. Also, they put some leek in it. Leek is very important. leak. It's good if you like.
I learned to like it. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was. It's good. I enjoy it.
Yeah, myself, I like it really. Mm-hmm.
Well, the addition of leeks definitely makes me perk up. How do you feel about it, Michael?
Yeah, it's not one of my favorites.
He'll learn.
Yeah, well, that's true, though.
When I think of the region of Italy that you're from, one of the foods that I think of is artichokes.
Yeah, artichokes. Mm-hmm. Artichoke. You know, interesting, the word artichoke, believe it or not, is the Genovese word. In Genovese dialect, because we have a dialect in the region of Genoa, and we call it artichoke. Artichoke. That's how they got the name artichoke. The real Italian name for artichokes is carciofi.
Right.
But the original name is Genovese, really.
I had no idea. That's so interesting.
Yes.
You know, I know that Genovese is very close to the French.
Yeah.
There's a lot of French in the Genovese dialect. And possibly, I guess the word artichoke went through France and into England, I imagine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
but that's
fascinating.
And most of the people, they grow artichokes here in California, you know, what do you call that? The area?
Castroville.
Castroville.
Yeah, and I think Joe and Wally, I think.
Yeah, the old Genovese is the one that, of them. Yeah.
Well, Northern California has the largest population of Ligurians outside of Liguria.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. So, Northern California.
Yeah, and a huge contribution to California agriculture.
More so than any place else in the south, for instance, Southern California.
Well, I think the tie-in is the geography.
Uh-huh. It's very similar.
Very similar. Very similar.
Oh, yeah, I told you, California, Sonoma County. Yeah. It's another Italy, really.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's a beautiful country, believe me.
You can really, really see those commonalities when you drive through the countryside in Liguria or driving through the countryside in Tuscany as well. You
exactly.
Can see
the rolling hills.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Michael, have you been to Italy? Have you gotten to see your...
Yeah, actually, I'm pretty fortunate. I went over there four different times. And my mother's also from Italy, so... she's from actually
Chiavari,
not too far away from the
just
town.
Down the coast. Yeah.
So I'm 100% Ligurian, which is pretty
kind of rare.
Unusual. Yeah,
yeah, and you've gotten to visit there. That's
great. I had a good chance to go over with a cultural club that really emphasizes the Ligurian part of it, and went over with students from South America and from Australia, and we learned a lot about our culture. A lot about the old dialect and the traditions as well. So I'm pretty fortunate to have that background.
And we're pretty fortunate that you've decided that you want to stay in the grocery business.
Yeah, we are very happy to have him, really. I think that's nice.
I wanted to thank you, George, on the air for giving me what may be the best recipe I've ever published. And I actually think I got it by eavesdropping. This was a long time ago. I think it was still in the 80s, the early 80s. Someone was buying bulk polenta from you. You had that jar there. Scooping it out. And you told her how to cook it. And you told her, this woman, to cook it in the oven.
Oh, yes.
And I listened, and I tried it, and I loved the method.
It is. It is a very good way of doing it.
Yeah, and I included that in my polenta book.
Great.
And the... the assistant food editor at the Los Angeles Times, Russ Parsons, loves that recipe, and he wrote about it. He just does handsprings with that recipe. So I don't know
great.
If I've ever thanked you for that.
You
deserve credit for that. I never would have thought of it. And on that note, I can't believe that we are running out of time. I hope you have enjoyed this hour as much as I have, and I want to thank all three of you, Rico, George, and Michael Traverso, for taking time out of your Sunday to be with me. In the meantime, feed yourself and each other really well. Shop at Traverso's on 3rd and B Street, and take care of each other. Life is too short not to.
Mouthful. Mouthful is hosted and produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast at krcb.org or from iTunes.
The moral of this story, well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too, and he'll sing to the Lord.